Obviously, he locked up, Beck said. And obviously, he left. Everything was perfectly normal this morning. I said nothing. Beck turned through 90 degrees and faced east. The wind came off the sea and flattened his clothes against him. His trouser legs flapped like flags. He moved his feet, scuffing the soles of his shoes against the grit like he was trying to get warm.
We don't need this now. We really don't need this. We've got a big weekend coming up.
I said nothing. They turned around together and headed back to the house and left me there alone. I was tired, but I wasn't going to get any rest, that was clear. There was bustle in the air, and the routine I had seen on the previous two nights was all shot to hell. There was no food in the kitchen, no dinner. The cook wasn't there. I heard people moving in the hallway. Duke came into the kitchen and walked straight past me and went out the back door. He was carrying a blue Nike sports bag. I followed him out and stood and watched from the corner of the house and saw him go into the second garage. 5 minutes later, he backed the black Lincoln out and drove off in it. He had changed the plates. When I had seen it in the middle of the night, it had six-digit main plates on it. Now it was showing a seven-digit New York number. I went back inside and looked for coffee. I found the machine, but I couldn't find any filter papers. I settled for a glass of water instead. I was halfway through drinking it when Beck came in. He was carrying a sports bag, too. The way it hung from its handles and the noise it made when it bumped against his leg told me it was full of heavy metal. Guns, probably. Maybe two of them.
Get the Cadillac. Right now. Pick me up at the front.
He took the keys out of his pocket and dropped them on the table in front of me. Then he crouched down and unzipped his bag and came out with two New York license plates and a screwdriver, handed them to me.
Put these on it first.
I saw guns in the bag. Two Heckler & Koch MP5Ks, short and fat and black, with big, bulbous, molded handles. Futuristic, like movie props. Where are we going?
We're following Duke down to Hartford, Connecticut. We've got some business there, remember?
He zipped the bag and stood up and carried it back out into the hallway. I sat still for a second. Then I raised my glass of water and toasted the blank wall in front of me. Here's to bloody wars and dread diseases, I said to myself. Chapter 7. I left the rest of the water in the kitchen and headed out toward the garage block. Dusk was gathering on the ocean horizon, 100 miles away in the east. The wind was blowing hard, and the waves were pounding. I stopped walking and turned a casual circle. Saw nobody else out and about. So I ducked out of sight down the side of the courtyard wall. Found my hidden bundle and laid the phony plates and the screwdriver on the rocks, and unwrapped both guns. Duffy's Glock went into my right-hand coat pocket. Dahl's PSM went into my left. I put the spare Glock mags in my socks, stowed the rag, and picked up the plates and the screwdriver, and backtracked to the courtyard entrance. The mechanic was busy in the third garage, the empty one. He had the doors wide open and was oiling the hinges. The space behind him was even cleaner than when I had seen it in the night. It was immaculate. The floor had been hosed. I could see it drying in patches. I nodded to the guy, and he nodded back. I opened up the left-hand garage, squatted down and unscrewed the main plate off the Cadillac's trunk lid and replaced it with the New York number, did the same at the front, left the old plates and the screwdriver on the floor, and got in and fired it up, backed it out and headed around to the carriage circle. The mechanic watched me go. Beck was waiting there for me. He opened the rear door himself and dropped his sports bag on the back seat. I heard the guns shifting inside. Then he closed the rear door again and slid in the front beside me.
Go. Use I-95 south as far as Boston.
We need gas.
Okay, first place you see.
Paulie was waiting at the gate. His face was all twisted up with anger. He was a problem that wouldn't keep much longer. He glared in at me, turned his head left and right, and kept his eyes on me the whole time he was opening the gate. I ignored him and drove on through. I didn't look back at him. Out of sight, out of mind, was the way I wanted to play it, as far as he was concerned. The coast road west was empty. We were on the highway 12 minutes after we left the house. I was getting used to the way the Cadillac drove. It was a nice car, smooth and quiet, but it was heavy on gas, that was for sure. The needle was getting seriously low. I could almost see it moving. The way I recalled it, the first gas stop was the one south of Kennebunk, the place where I had met with Duffy and Elliot on the way down to New London. We reached it within 15 minutes. It felt very familiar to me. I drove past the parking lot where we had broken into the van and headed down to the pumps. Beck said nothing. I got out and filled the tank. It took a long time, 18 gallons. I screwed the cap back on, and Beck buzzed his window down and gave me a wad of cash. "Always buy gas with cash," he said. "Safer that way." I kept the change, which was a little over 15 bucks. I figured I was entitled. I hadn't been paid yet. I got back on the road and settled in for the trip. I was tired. Nothing worse than mile after mile of lonely highway when you're tired. Beck was quiet beside me. At first, I thought he was just morose, or shy, or inhibited. Then I realized he was nervous. I guessed he wasn't entirely comfortable heading into battle. I was, especially because I knew for sure we weren't going to find anybody to fight. "How's Richard?" I asked him.
"He's fine. He's got inner strength. He's a good son."
"Is he?" I said, because I needed to say something. I needed him to talk, to keep me awake.
"He's very loyal. A father can't ask for more."
Then he went quiet again, and I fought to stay awake. 5 miles. 10.
"Have you ever dealt with small-time dope dealers?" he asked me.
"No."
"There's something unique about them."
He didn't say anything more for 20 miles. Then he picked it up again like he had spent the entire time chasing an elusive thought.
"They're completely dominated by fashion," he said.
"Are they?" I said, like I was interested. I wasn't, but I still needed him to talk.
"Of course, lab drugs are fashion items anyway. Really, their customers are just as bad as they are. I can't even keep track of the stuff they sell. Some different weird name every week."
"What's a lab drug?"
"A drug made in a lab. You know, something manufactured, something chemical. Not the same as something that grows naturally in the ground.
Like marijuana."
"Or heroin. Or cocaine. Those are natural products, organic. They're refined, obviously, but they aren't created in a beaker."
I said nothing, just fought to keep my eyes open. The car was way too warm. You need cold air when you're tired. I bit my bottom lip to stay awake,